What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's Views podcast here on Big Blue View Radio. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View. And on today's show, as we continue to talk about what the Giants did in free agency, how that opens up the board for them in the draft, and looking ahead to what kind of team the Giants might be in 2021, I'm joined by former Minnesota Vikings Executive of the Year, Jeff Diamond, to help us break it down. Jeff, thanks for coming by.
Always happy to be with you, Ed. Thank you.
Hey, you know, we always like talking to you. We always like getting some of your insight. And just quickly, you know, a generic sort of opening question here for you. We're obviously through the big part of free agency. Just your thoughts on what the Giants accomplished here. You know, they got Leonard Williams on a long-term deal. They brought in Kenny Golladay to be their number one wide receiver on an old-fashioned visit, of all things. And then they spent big money on Adoree Jackson, also brought in some other players. Just your thoughts on what the Giants accomplished here.
Yeah, I think that they've done some good things in free agency. I think that certainly getting Leonard Williams signed to a long-term deal was important for them and a priority. And he had an excellent year last year. The question is, in a non-contract year, can he keep it at that level and even get better as time goes on? That's always the concern that I had as a GM or as a president, that when a guy in a contract year has that big year, can he sustain it? Can he keep the motivation? And hopefully that'll be the case for Leonard Williams, who certainly was a talented player coming out of USC. We all know that as a top 10 pick. And I like Kenny Golladay. It could prove to be an overpay in the final analysis, but they had to do what they had to do in the market. And the $18 million a year deal is certainly big money, and wide receiver one money. And he's a guy that has fought some injury issues and a little bit of inconsistency over his time in Detroit, but certainly has some explosiveness to his game and is a talented player. And I think that he is a good addition to that receiving core that looks like it's really upgraded, especially if a John Ross could stay healthy. I like Slayton. Sterling Shepard has proven to be productive. So I think they've upgraded the weapons for Daniel Jones, and then bringing Kyle Rudolph in, who, where I am here based in Minnesota, know Kyle very well and his capabilities. And I think he's got a lot of good football left in him. I think he just fell into a situation in Minnesota where they had drafted Irv Smith Jr. and Tyler Conklin the last few years. And those guys were coming on, especially when Rudolph hurt his foot at the end of last season. And that kind of sealed his fate here, especially with the big contract. And so I think he's going to upgrade the red zone capability for the Giants and for Daniel Jones. And it's one thing that Evan Engram last year, as you know well, had only one touchdown reception. And so I think that Rudolph will help Engram in that two tight end type approach that so many teams are using around the league right now. And I still think Evan Engram is a very talented player, and that Kyle Rudolph will only help his game. And I think maybe show him a few things about what being a pro is all about in terms of consistency, in terms of preparation, and all those things. That Rudolph is just a great pro on and off the field. So I think that's a good signing for the Giants. And I think another under the radar player that our agent group IFA represents is Afadio Denebel. And as you know, we also represent Tate Crowder, who had a really excellent rookie season for the Giants, which we were really excited about. And Odenebel, I think, is a talented guy. And 2 years ago, he had 7 sacks playing only 33% of the downs for the Vikings. And then last year, I think he suffered a little bit from a couple of nicks and perhaps not having Danielle Hunter on the other side kind of hurt the entire pass rush for the Vikings. But I think that Afadi still led the Vikings in pressures. And I think he's still a really very good football player, excellent pass rusher. I think that he is a guy that has the capability of really having some big success in New York. And I know he's excited about the move. And I've talked to him recently after he signed with the Giants, and he's excited. And frankly, I was surprised the Vikings didn't tender him at $2.1 million as a restricted free agent. That would have been a cheap tender for them. But they were tight against the cap and decided that they were going to try to re-sign him for cheaper. It didn't work out. And now he's in New York, ends up making more money with the Giants. So I think that's a good signing for the Giants. And Adoree Jackson is the one I would question from the standpoint of his career production in Tennessee. Only 2 interceptions in his first, whatever, 3-4 years down there. And he was a former first-round pick, has that great speed, but has some injury issues that he's dealt with. And for $13 million a year, I'd want a little more consistency out of a player than what his production has been in Tennessee, especially as a corner. And as you said, they added some other players that could kind of fill in and help the cause. But ultimately, as we all know, for the Giants, the key is going to be the development of Daniel Jones, the return of Saquon Barkley. They've got a lot of talent on that team, a lot of good players on defense. I think Nate Solder coming back will help the offensive line. Andrew Thomas was coming out at the end of the year. So I think the Giants' arrow is pointing up. But again, so much of it depends on Barkley staying healthy, having that good running game, which will help the passing game, and then having Daniel Jones take another step forward this year.
Jeff, I do want to back up a little bit. You did a nice job there going through all the different players that the Giants have brought in. I want to back up first to Odenebel, because he's not a player that I know a whole lot about. Still a fairly young guy, still hasn't played, you know, an inordinate number of snaps. I guess my first question with him is, you know, the Giants play a base 3-4, and we all know that every defense is hybrid now. Every defense has guys occasionally stand up and occasionally, you know, also with their hand in the ground. What is he for the Giants? Is he a down defensive lineman, you know, maybe a 5 tech, or is he a guy they can use as an edge, as a guy who stands up on occasion? Where does he fit?
I think he can do both. I think he could be an inside pass rusher where the Vikings used him from time to time. And I think with using his quickness inside and his strength, I think he can also be an outside edge rusher, which was basically his role last year. The Vikings played a 4-3, so a different defense. But I think he's got versatility in his game, and I think he's got athletic ability and speed and quickness. And he had a great tutor here in Andre Patterson, the Vikings defensive line coach, who helped develop him. So I think there's really good upside for Afadi and really a low risk signing for the Giants on just the 1 year, $2.5 million deal. So I think that he's going to prove versatile and can do a lot of different things. And he could be standing up, he could be down, he could be inside, he could be outside. It's going to be interesting to see how they decide to utilize him.
Well, Patrick Graham is a guy who is certainly creative. So we shall see, you know, how he puts all the pieces together. I'm anxious to see if Odenebel can you know, take a step forward for the Giants. I go back to the Giants a couple of years ago when Pat Shurmur was still head coach. letting Romeo Okwara get away. And they let Okwara get away ostensibly because they looked at Okwara as a 3-4 down defensive end who couldn't play the run. And they were transitioning to a 3-4. And I don't think they saw him as a fit. So, and obviously you'd love to have Okwara's talent back, but maybe Odenigbo can kind of be a makeup for the Giants for making that mistake on Okwara a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think that he can. I think he can play the run. He can play the pass. He is versatile. And yeah, and I think that as I said, they've got some talent in that team. I still think that they could use a solid piece as a run stopper. I think letting Dalvin Tomlinson get away to the Vikings. I understand their priority was Leonard Williams. And so Tomlinson goes to the Vikings on that $11 million a year deal. And I know the Vikings are really excited about him shoring up their run defense, especially, and maybe a little better pass rusher than some people thought as an inside guy, and probably will be even more effective in a 4-3 defense and with the four down linemen. And I think that he will have some success here in Minnesota. And but he's a guy they need to replace, and I'm not sure Austin Johnson is going to be the guy to do that. So they could be looking to the draft at that defensive tackle, inside nose tackle type position in that 3-4 to see how they can replace him.
All right, Jeff, before we really get into the draft, I want to ask you a little bit more about another one of the guys that you know pretty well. And you talked about Kyle Rudolph, but I want to ask, first of all, how concerned should the Giants be about that foot injury? I mean, it turned up that, you know, that during his physical, the Giants discovered that the foot injury, and we're still not sure what exactly that foot injury is, but turns out that it hadn't healed, needs surgery. He says he should be ready, you know, for week one, but Do you know what the injury actually is, and should there be any real concern, you know, as far as his availability or effectiveness for the regular season?
Well, I'm sure there's concern. There always is when there's an injury to a guy that a team's counting on and has invested whatever $14 million over 2 years with, and I'm sure that they were disappointed that it hadn't healed better since December when it occurred, or late November. And so having that extra surgery and needing more time, I think as I said, the concern is he won't be able to do much in how much can he do in training camp. For example, there is really probably going to be no off-season program as far as OTAs, or if there is, it probably wouldn't take place until June or something, and sounds like it's not even going to happen. So everything's going to be virtual, but he's not going to be able to do a lot of training as far as running and lower body. Now, I know Kyle well enough, and that he will do whatever he has to do to get himself ready, to get himself in shape. He's got a lot of pride, and he wants to show the Giants that they made a good signing. He wants to show the Vikings they made a mistake. And so I fully expect him to be ready by regular season. The question is, how much will he play in preseason, and which will probably just be three preseason games once they approve the 17-game regular season schedule that should happen, I think, this week. And so, yeah, it's definitely a concern. But I just think, knowing Kyle Rudolph and what he's done in his career and his work ethic, I think that he'll be ready to go come September. But again, how much will he be able to integrate into that offensive system in training camp? That would be the concern.
And I wanted to ask you, just from a front office perspective, the way that this shook out, you know, obviously Kyle didn't take a visit to New York. He came in, basically there was an agreement, 2 years, I think $12 million before he took his physical. So all of this was, you know, the whole injury discovery sort of came about after there was an agreement. And I was curious to see what was going to happen with the contract. And as it turned out, I don't think any adjustments were made to the contract at all. I'm curious if you had, you know, what during your time, you know, as a GM or president of an organization, if you went through anything similar to that. And, you know, the way that it was handled, I mean, is there any criticism to be leveled at the Giants at all over the way that was done?
Well, I think it's difficult in this environment, in the pandemic environment, to be able to bring guys in for visits. As you said, it's very rare that it ever happens. And so you have to kind of trust what you're hearing and what you understand. And it's just, I'm sure, a disappointment, but I would call it a COVID era disappointment in that regard, that this happened. And it's not something that's going to repeat over time in the future for the Giants or for other teams. And I'm sure it's happened for other teams. It never really happened for me because we were always able to bring players in for a physical before we ever signed them. And so in this case, just as we said, just a difficult how it all unfolded because of the pandemic, and hopefully Kyle will be okay. But I wouldn't level a ton of criticism at the Giants for the situation, because it's just hard to know exactly where it was at until they actually saw him.
Right. Okay. You know, one of the other questions that I get, and again, I'm kind of asking you to keep your front office cap on here, is in regards to the salary cap. And a lot of fans will, you know, send me questions and say, the Giants had no money. They entered free agency at one point over the cap, had to make, you know, a couple of moves that they didn't want to make, cutting Kevin Zeitler, and obviously not able to keep Dalvin Tomlinson. But they did an awful lot with what seemed like not a whole lot of money. And I was asked the other day about the cap, and I said, well, to be honest, the cap really doesn't matter that much, because teams will be able, what teams really want to do, they're going to figure out a way to do, because you can move money around. And I think when I think back on the way I answered that, that's probably not right. The cap matters because I think the Giants wish Kevin Zeitler was still part of their team. But the point is, I think the other point is, if a team and a player really want to get something done, no matter what the cap numbers are, they can get it done. Am I right, at least in that respect?
Well, I think to a certain extent, I think if you're in a situation such as New Orleans was in coming into the season, where they were, whatever, $70 million over the cap, then you don't really have a lot of wiggle room, and it's really tough to get anything accomplished other than signing a Jameis Winston to a cheap deal and picking up money when Drew Brees retired and doing a few other things. But the Saints, for example, not a lot of wiggle room for them, or some of the other teams such as the Steelers and the Bears that were tight. And I think that, but for for other teams, you've seen the creativity that they've been able to do. And these were teams that were closer to the cap level. And I'm talking specifically about the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Super Bowl champs, and what they've done with all these voidable contracts with Brady, with Shaq Barrett, with Levante David. I mean, some of these really key players that they were able to bring back and franchise Chris Godwin, really pretty amazing to be able to do all those things and do all these voidable deals, push all that money, kick the can down the road, as they say. But it's all going to come home to roost eventually. And teams such as the Bucks are just counting on the cap to take a big leap next year with fans back in the stands, with the new TV contracts that really don't kick in till the following year, but maybe they'll expedite some of the money, and with the 17 games helping there. But I think that's where what you said is accurate, that you can find a way to do some of these signings, such as the Giants did with Williams and Galladay and Adoree Jackson, to free up some money and be able to bring some of these players in. And yeah, I think Zeitler is a loss. I think Tomlinson is a loss, but we'll see how the replacements come. And if they're able to grab some guys in the draft, and there are a lot of good players in this draft coming up at a lot of these positions. So we'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, I think there's a certain amount of truth. You can find the room, unless you're the Saints this past offseason, where it was just too tough.
Well, I look at the Saints and maybe the Bucks, and to a certain extent, you talk about kicking the can down the road, and there might be certain teams that look at it and say, we're in our window right now. And 2 or 3 years down the road, when that bill comes due, our window is going to be closed. So it's not really going to matter. Now is the time. And maybe that's what those franchises did.
Yeah. And I understand that. I understand that thinking. Absolutely. And it's what I did as a GM in Minnesota in 1998. And at that point in time, we were coming off a playoff season. We were coming off a playoff win in New York and going into the 98 season. And we had a number of really key free agents, guys like John Randall ends up in the Hall of Fame. Chris Carter was coming up for an extension. Robert Smith, our top running back. And I did several long-term deals with them and did some other restructuring of some contracts that were going to create some cap issues down the road. But we felt that team was ready. And as it turned out, re-signing all those guys was really critical. And we had a 15-1 season in 98 in Minnesota. It didn't hurt to draft Randy Moss in the first round at number 21. But,
no,
but
it
again,
didn't.
Again, we were able to spread the cap into the future and have that great year. And fortunately for me, by the next year, I was in Tennessee with a Super Bowl team. So I didn't have to worry about all those restructures I'd done and all those long-term deals to sign all those guys. And the Vikings still were a playoff team for a couple of years. And then they hit a little bit of a downtrend that was going to happen because of the cap situation. And so that's what teams do when they're right there, when they're poised, as you said. And that's what the Bucks are thinking this year in trying to do all these restructures and all these voidable year contracts and giving Brady a 5-year extension that's really a 2-year extension.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like crazy stuff, but there's a logic to the situation that I understand.
So you made a mess and then you just left it for other people.
I did. I went to Tennessee and fortunately inherited a good situation there.
There
we
go.
And we had a lot of good players there. So
all right.
It ended up being a good move.
Hey, Jeff, I want to take a quick break here, and then I do want to get into the draft a little bit with you. So, Giants fans, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsors, and we'll come back and we'll talk draft with Jeff Diamond.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's KLAVIYO.com/box.
I All right, Giants fans, Ed Valentine back here on the Valentine's Views podcast, talking with former NFL GM and team president Jeff Diamond. And Jeff, we spent a lot of time before the break on free agency. So let's talk draft. And I have to admit, when all of those trades got made on Friday, Miami, you know, moving down and then moving up, and San Francisco moving up, and the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, moving down. From a Giants fan perspective, there's two reactions. The first one is, oh man, all those teams are moving for quarterbacks. There could be five quarterbacks that come off the board before the Giants pick at 11. So all of that movement has got to be good for the Giants. So, I mean, just first of all, do you see it that way, that all of that movement, every quarterback that comes off the board, you know, is a player that's going to be there for the Giants at 11?
Yeah, definitely. I absolutely agree with that. And I think that when I remember being in a lot of draft rooms with the Vikings and the Titans in my career and being very excited when we had a franchise caliber quarterback, such as Steve McNair in Tennessee. And when quarterbacks were chosen early before we were going to pick, I was always excited about that. We were excited. Our scouts were, because we knew that would push down a position player that we were really interested in even further to us. So I think that's great news for the Giants, that if all these top quarterbacks are going off the board, if Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, all these guys are picked before 11, I think that's fantastic news for the Giants, because then they could get whoever they're looking at, if it's an edge rusher, if it's a corner, and some really good corners in this draft, and or perhaps an interior defensive lineman to replace a Tomlinson, a guy like Christian Barmore from Alabama. I mean, there are a lot of things that can happen for the Giants. And I think that it's good news for them, the more quarterbacks that are taken early.
And the other part of looking at those trades is, we know Dave Gettleman, and we know he's a traditionalist, and everybody knows that he's never traded down in the draft. And the other part of watching teams move around the board like that is, you know, Giants fans are like, oh man, how come our GM never does that? You know what I mean? Is it really just a personality thing with Dave? Is it just the way he was trained? Is it the fact that he's, you know, that he's a more, you know, that he's an older GM, or is it just, you know, opportunity?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think that he's a personnel guy, and he loves his draft choices, and he's going to be very apprehensive about moving around or moving up or down. And you move up, you're going to give up some of your draft choices down the line. If you move down, I think that's always a risk. And I never like moving down, especially if you like a player at that spot. And so, and going into a draft to make moves that never really made a lot of sense, unless you're really such as the 49ers, you're thinking, we're definitely going to take a quarterback at number three now. And so then there's logic to that type of move, or the Rams a few years ago when they made the big trade with the Titans to move up to take Jared Goff. And then Jared Goff only lasts 4 years there. And so it's just crazy how things turn out. But yeah, I think that Gettleman is a guy who values his draft picks, and he thinks that as we did, and as my scouting staff always did, we always kind of went into a draft thinking there were about eight or nine blue chip players in a draft, and that we're going to take one of those blue chip players regardless of position. And so, I mean, hey, don't be shocked if all of a sudden, even though they signed Kenny Golladay and John Ross in free agency and they've got Slayton and Shepard, well, if all of a sudden one of those top wide receivers slides down and Devontae Smith or Jamar Chase, which they're probably not going to be there, but who knows if something like that happens. And that's what happened to us in Minnesota in 98. When we took Randy Moss, we had Chris Carter, we had Jake Reed. They were both 1,000-yard receivers, and everybody's saying, oh, you need defense. But this guy was such a superior talent that we ended up taking Randy Moss at number 21. And so I think that Gettleman, certainly he knows the needs of the team. He knows he'd like to add corner help. He knows he'd like to add interior offensive line help and maybe a defensive tackle. But if a superior talent at another position, other than I don't think he's going to take a quarterback.
Right.
And I think he's going to not take a running back because he's going to count on Barkley being back. And they did sign some a back in free agency. Other than that, I think anything could happen. And I think that's the beauty of the draft, that people like to do all these mock drafts and all these predictions. But what they're not taking into account is if a great player slides down, that they could take that player.
Right.
And it could even be an offensive tackle because Solder opted out last year. He's coming back. He's an older player at this point, and they're counting on him. And they took Andrew Thomas last year, who came on towards the end. But, hey, who's to say that they don't take another tackle? Because there's some good tackles in this draft.
Right. So I'm going to ask you, there's you mentioned wide receivers, and my favorite wide receiver in this class is Ja'Marr Chase, the LSU wide receiver. And it's because he wins at all three levels, and it's because – I watch him and 50-50 balls belong to him. They just belong to him. He wins 50-50 balls. And the way I put it is, if I'm Dave Gettleman and Ja'Marr Chase is at 11, somehow I think I might break a hip getting that card in so fast. So what I want to ask you is, of among all those wide receivers, and let's put Kyle Pitts in that group of wide receiver tight end. Let's put him in that group of what I call big four. Who's your guy?
Well, my guy, and I'm biased, is Rashad Bateman because we represent him at IFA.
Oh, no fair. No fair. I mean, but yeah. I hear you. Got to get a plug in for your guy.
Of course. And he has his pro day at Minnesota on Thursday. So we're very excited to see how he performs and hopefully runs a sub 4.4 and that'll elevate him. But I think certainly Chase, as you mentioned, and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle are the kind of the cream of the crop. And yeah, Chase is hard to not like what he's done at LSU and just his production over the last several years. And especially on that national championship team, he and Justin Jefferson, so productive. And then Jefferson comes into the NFL with the Vikings down the line as a, whatever the 20 something pick in the draft and ends up, could have been the offensive rookie of the year, was number two to Justin Herbert, had a 1,400 yard season. And so you can see what kind of talent Jefferson has, and Ja'Marr Chase, obviously similar out of that LSU system and maybe a little bit more speed and agility. But as I said, Jefferson's a great player, but Chase, to me, I think he and Devontae Smith are just so talented. The thing that worries me a little bit about Smith is he has kind of that frail frame. So I'd want to get him in the weight room real quick. and we saw in the national championship game where he had whatever 200 yards receiving before he got hurt. And so he's a guy that certainly has great, great talent. And
our team's going to push him down because he's 170 pounds, you think?
No, I don't think so. He'll still be a top 10 pick. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's even top five, but probably closer to top 10. He's just a really talented guy. And as I said, get him in the weight room, bulk him up a little bit, and then you're looking at just a really explosive player for the future. But I love both those guys.
And I need to ask you about a guy that gets connected to the Giants all the time. And you talk about needs. We talk about interior offensive line, interior defensive line, edge rusher, you know, wide receiver, if you want to add another one. This guy doesn't play any of those positions, and yet he's a guy that people connect to the Giants all the time. And also because Joe Judge went to the Penn State Pro Day the other day. So we're talking about Micah Parsons, off-ball linebacker for Penn State. And the question for me isn't whether his talent deserves being the 11th overall pick in the draft, because I think he's the best defensive player in the draft. The question becomes, how, from your perspective, how do you treat the character concerns with him? Are there really character concerns with him? And I'm just curious what if you have any sense of how NFL teams see the alleged character concerns with Micah Parsons.
Yeah, I think you obviously have to do your research on it, and that's where the scouting process and your contacts come in. And it's so important to understand what kind of things that are in his background, and are they legitimate concerns, or are these things that were just kind of one-off incidents? And so you have to do your due diligence on players. But again, I think you also have to hope that a guy, if he made mistakes, it was when he was younger and can overcome them. I think, having said that, for me, that was always, it's a different situation if you're talking about things as domestic violence or sexual assault or things like that, because I had no tolerance policies on those situations. And I think that you have to be very, very cognizant of those type of deals. But they'll do their due diligence on Micah Parsons. But he's obviously a premier athlete. He can run, he can make plays, and all the things that he has done, and just physical and instinctive guy. And so, yeah, I think he's a guy that certainly could be a very bona fide pick at 11 if indeed they've done their due diligence and they feel like they can get him in the right system. And I refer again to when we drafted Randy Moss in Minnesota, and he had character concerns coming out, but we did our research, and we actually had a scout who had coached with the Marshall coaches, and they had said that some of the things that Randy had were in high school and early college. And when he lost his scholarship at Florida State and Notre Dame and signed with Marshall, but the Marshall coaches told our scouting department that he had never had any problems there. And I also, before we drafted him, got Chris Carter on the phone and said, "Hey, Chris, will you mentor him? Will you help make sure that he understands what it's like to be coming to the NFL and what the expectations are on and off the field?" And Chris said, "Absolutely. I know what kind of talent he is and what he can do for our team." And so I think that's where the Giants need to have that veteran type presence, of veteran leadership, to be able to do that with a guy like Micah Parsons. And so whoever that player is on that Giants defense, that they can say, "Hey, help mentor him," or the coaching staff, or whatever the case may be.
All right. It's going to be an interesting deal to see how the NFL looks at Parsons, because the talent is there. Jeff, last thing for you that I want to really ask you about. Over the weekend, John Mara had some really interesting things to say about Daniel Jones. I mean, he was asked not whether he thinks Daniel Jones can be the quarterback of the future for the Giants, but he was asked point blank if he believes Daniel Jones is a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, is a guy that can win Super Bowls. And he said yes, without any hesitation at all. I'm not sure Daniel Jones has proven that yet. I think that Daniel Jones has shown a lot, but I guess the question is, are you surprised that the Giants ownership would be that adamant or that far in the guy's corner at this point in his career?
Well, I think it's also a kind of a confidence booster for Daniel Jones. And I think that's part of John Mara's motivation in making a statement like that, because obviously he's a talented guy, but I think that they want him to exude extreme confidence as a quarterback, as a leader of the offense. And that's something a young player has to develop to a certain extent. And now Daniel Jones coming into the season, he's been there a couple of years now. And I think he's a guy that I still think has a lot of ability. I've been impressed with what I've seen, but I think it's also hard to judge a guy when you take away his top weapon, which was Saquon Barkley last year. And the receiving core was okay but now it's been upgraded significantly at both wide receiver and tight end. And so, and the offensive line theoretically should be better in Andrew Thomas's second year, and with Solder coming back after the opt-out. And if they can add some help on the interior, they are going to miss Seitler, as you said, but if they can get some help there inside and maybe in the draft. And so I think that it's a smart move on John Mara's part to build him up and to say positive things. And I think it's, to a certain extent, the talent level is there. And I think this is a really show us year for Daniel Jones with these, the additions that they brought. If Barkley is healthy and can get back to his production level that is expected of the second player taken in the draft. And so if those things happen, it would not surprise me if Daniel Jones turns that 6-10 into 10-6 this year, and or 11-5 even, and has the Giants in the playoffs. And I think that when you look at the NFC East, I think it's just wide open. Dallas certainly with Prescott coming back and what the kind of talent level that they've got on that football team, but their offensive line is not what it was, and how's that going to shake out? Washington, Ryan Fitzpatrick comes in there. They've got a great defense, we know, but offensively, how's Fitzpatrick? Is Fitzmagic going to show up in Washington? We'll see about that. And Philly is, I think, still in a rebuilding mode with Jalen Hurts. And so I think that they've got a lot of – they're looking to the future, obviously, with some of these moves they've made with picking up extra first-round picks in the future. And so I think that you're really looking at a three-horse race in the NFC East. And I include the Giants in that category. I think that they're going to be in the race this year. I think they are taking steps forward every year. But again, the key to me is, can Barkley stay healthy? Can Daniel Jones continue his ascension? Can the defense continue to develop as they've done under Graham? Jason Garrett in his second year with Daniel Jones, I think that'll help the cause. And Joe Judge is the second year head coach. He's shown some good stuff, but he's still a young head coach, and so he still needs to continue his development too. So I think the Giants can be competitive this year in the NFC East, definitely.
It'd be nice to cover a good football team for a change, Jeff. All right. Hey, Jeff, always appreciate your coming on the show. Thank you very, very much. Hopefully we'll get back with you maybe after the draft and get some of your thoughts on what the Giants do there. Giants fans, thank you very, very much for listening. Please remember, stay safe out there, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.